This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Who is Barbie? Why was she created? And what impact did she have on the toy industry? We'll answer all of these questions and more on this edition of Getting Schooled. I'm Abby Hornacek. Life in plastic has never looked so fantastic for the iconic Barbie doll. 2024 marks 65 years since Barbie was introduced to the world, and yet she remains as popular as ever. The release of the Barbie movie last summer reignited a love for the doll among people of all ages and proved what an influential role she's played in childhoods across generations. Whether a president, an astronaut, a princess, or a babysitter, Barbie has shown women and girls they can be whoever they want to be. So what are some of the careers Barbie has had over the years? How has she evolved since her creation? And how did the doll become an iconic figure in pop culture? Joining me today for a closer look at the history and legacy of Barbie is toy expert and consultant, Chris Byrne. And Chris joins me now. How's it going, Chris?
Good. Thank you so much. So excited to talk Barbie with you.
I cannot wait. And I love that you are a toy expert and analyst. I first need to know how you even get that job, because that's amazing.
Well, I was a child actor, and I thought I was going to be in the theater. And when I got to New York to become a great actor, which didn't happen, I ended up getting a job in a toy company naming products and writing box copy. And I just sort of stayed in the toy industry. And you know, it's been all these years have passed. I've been out on my own. I was hired away from a terrible job to launch the game Pictionary. I've done a lot of consulting over the years, and it's just sort of turned into that kind of career. It's sort of my sentence I always tell people is, sure, I'll try that.
That's a good attitude to have.
Yeah.
Also, Pictionary is maybe the best game of all time.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah.
I won't
play with my mom though. So I'm like done.
You said you never beat your mom?
No, I wouldn't play with her. I was done.
There you go. Well, maybe next podcast we can play Pictionary before we get started for our warm-up.
Okay.
So I have to ask you that. I know I'm getting sidetracked, but there's so much that you just said that was really interesting to me. You said you would name toys?
Yeah. I worked for CBS Toys, which had brands Wonder, Creative Playthings, Gabriel, Jim Dandy, Child Guidance, and later Ideal. And there were two of us who were copywriters, and they would bring a toy down, and we would have to, you know, write the name and write the subhead and do all this stuff. And we were like in our very early 20s, so we were full of beans. And I remember sending up a list to the product manager, and one of the names on the list was Baby's First Disappointment. And he came downstairs, and he was apoplectic. He goes, "This is a serious business." And of course, we're falling
out.
How do you even
name a toy? What's that process like? How do you even think about it?
You know, it's really funny. They give you like a model, and you sit there and you play with it, and you try to figure out what you can do, and then you come up with some names, and it's got to be fun, and it's got to kind of be very brandy type of thing or catchy. And then what you would end up doing is, like, of course, then you had to send it up to legal to see if it could be trademarked. And then back and forth. And it was just, and then we'd write the package copy and all the instructions. And so I'm the person everyone hated around midnight on Christmas Eve to figure out how to get that thing together.
You were the Grinch.
right.
Well, that's a very, very cool job that you have or had. I have to also ask you about Barbie then. Do you think that's aptly named? Because she's named after Barbara, right? Can we get into that a bit?
She's named after Ruth Handler's daughter, Barbara. Barbie Millicent Rogers was from Willows, Wisconsin. And she was born on March 9th, 1959. and there's all this lore about Barbie. And yes, it really was. I mean, it's kind of a very, it was 1959, 58, 59 when they were developing it. It's very much a name of that time. You know, that sort of sparkling post-war kind of, it's Barbie type of thing.
Right. Well, you mentioned the lore. What about the origins of Barbie made her so successful? Let's just even start with the origins of Barbie. And what was the toy world like at the time that she came into existence?
I love that question. In the 30s, 40s, 50s, dolls were mostly, dimensional dolls were mostly baby dolls. And because what were women going to do? They were going to grow up and be moms. So of course, so they had to learn how to nurture and be moms. And that was the role play that they were doing. Getting into the 50s and the post-World War II years, any fashion doll was largely paper dolls. There were Betsy McCall paper dolls. There were other famous paper dolls. And that's the only way you played with fashion. And Ruth Handler, who was really a visionary, saw this doll, this German doll. It was called Bild Lilly, B-I-L-D-L-I-L-L-I-E. And it was made in Germany. And Bild Lilly was a grown-up girl, and she had a questionable reputation. She was part of comics, right? And she was always kind of a loose reputation. And it was really
kind of like satire. A call girl, right?
Pardon me?
She's kind of like a call girl, right?
Courtesan call girl. Well, yeah, exactly. You know,
okay.
She was a girl of ill repute. But what Ruth saw was an 11-inch doll that looked like a teenager. It had the cat eyes at the time. And she really believed that the doll could be an avenue for girls to express themselves, to really mature, and to go from that very awkward, I'm a little girl with a baby doll, to I'm a teenager and I'm going to be a grown woman. So it really changed doll play. And in 1959, she had a heck of a time selling that to the all-male board of Mattel. And they were going, well, why do they want that? Girls just are going to be mommies. You know, it was really up against the sort of white male heteronormative hegemony that was dominating everything in the culture at the time. But she fought for it, and Barbie came out at $3.99, which was a very expensive price at the time for a doll. And it didn't do that well at first, but then it started to catch on. She was playing catch up to Chatty Cathy, who was introduced the same year, also by Mattel. So, but Barbie ultimately found her way and began to be something that little girls played with. And those girls who really were little girls in the early 60s really came to understand themselves and to socialize around Barbie as peers, not as little mothers, but as girl-to-girl peers.
All right, we've got to step aside for a quick recess, but we'll be back right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
How did they market Barbie then? Because if she's this doll that is a woman and you're marketing it to young girls to then understand this, how did that happen? And what was the very first Barbie like?
Well, the very first Barbie was a Barbie it had the cat eye like Bild Lilly. It had the blonde hair. It had there was also a brunette. It had a black and white striped bathing suit, which if you've seen the Barbie movie, it's in those first frames. That's what the original Barbie looked like. But she wasn't marketed as a woman. She was marketed as a teenage fashion model. So when girls were 8, 9, 10, what do they fantasize about? They don't fantasize about being moms. They fantasize about being teenagers. Because remember, at the time, it was the time of Patty Duke and all of the stuff and the rise of the American teenager in the post-World War II years, because we were a more affluent society. There was more leisure time. Kids weren't needed to work on the farm or at home. So we suddenly had this whole class of kids called teenagers. they looked like they were having a free, fun, good time independently. So that was the aspiration there, not to be a grown up.
Well, that's still my aspiration, to not be a grown up, even though we've passed that, unfortunately. Well, that's interesting though, because so she started off kind of like Built Lily with the cat eye. She had the bathing suit, but over time she really has evolved a lot. I personally, growing up, didn't love Barbie because I was more of a tomboy. I wasn't as much of a girly girl, and it was all like the girly girls who were playing with Barbie. But then I remember there was this bowling Barbie that had a bowling ball that was connected to a magnet on her arm, and you'd pull the arm back and you would bowl with it. And I was like, oh, it's kind of like an action figure now.
Right.
So what? She has so many careers and occupations. Can you just give me a glimpse into some of her other iconic roles, and what are some of the weirdest ones that you've noticed?
Well, I mean, my favorite one is paleontologist, because I think that just is funny, and it's fun to say. But before we get to that, Barbie almost went away in the end of the 60s because the whole role of women in the culture was changing, and you go into the early 70s and the ERA movement and all of that, and suddenly Barbie was not relevant any longer, or she represented something that women felt was much more needed to be much broader. So fast forward, we go to Jill Barad, who was one of the best product people ever. And she and John Emmerman recreated the whole notion of Barbie as we girls can do anything. And that's probably, you know, before you encountered Barbie. So we girls can do anything really opened the door to astronaut, president, scientist, right? They've just introduced, you know, movie director Barbie. She's had, I don't even remember how many careers. I lost track at like 150 careers that she's had. And so Barbie went from being this very specific Malibu girl, beach girl. I guess they moved from Wisconsin to Malibu at some point. She went from being this very, very specific Malibu sort of gidget, you know, Sally Field as a young woman type of character, to more of an every doll, if you will, that every little girl could project her hopes, dreams, fantasies, her desire for a bowling trophy onto Barbie. And that was actually what Ruth really wanted. She wanted Barbie to be a catalyst for imagination and possibility for women.
What I guess I should have asked you a little bit earlier when you were talking about Built Lily and how Ruth Handler came across this in Germany. What made Ruth Handler go, we need to create something here and we need to create this doll? Was it just the need of the time and kind of what you were saying? They only had very limited options of dolls to play with at the time, little girls did?
I think so. I mean, in pure merchandising terms, she saw a void in the marketplace. But she also saw that girls in their play were being limited in the way that boys were not being limited, right? Boys were not being limited into just this mommy track type of thing. They could be engineers. I mean, if you look at the original Erector Set books, it says, hey, boys, right up front. All of this stuff. So she saw the potential for something that could be a catalyst for the imagination for girls and open up possibility for them. Let them in their fantasy or their imagination conceive of possibilities that the culture at large wasn't necessarily telling them they could have.
Right. Well, you said that Barbie almost went away in 1960.
The late 60s.
So how was she received by consumers? I know there's some controversy just because you're kind of bucking the trend at the time. She was more womanly, and we've heard everything, but Barbie was reinvented with this movie kind of in the last several years. So can you take me through that evolution?
Sure. I mean, Barbie was, one of my jokes is always Barbie is essentially an inert lump of largely polyvinyl chloride, right? So she's a hunk of plastic. And the way,
very scientific,
very, very scientific.
You're science Barbie.
but what happens to Barbie is because she has a human characteristic, a humanoid form, people project onto Barbie their hopes, dreams, aspirations, their realities. And it's really kind of classically Freudian. And the whole idea of the Freudian totem, onto which we project our hopes, our fears, whatever. And so Barbie in the 60s began to represent this good time party girl, which during the Vietnam War protests, the singers like Janis Joplin and Jefferson Airplane, they were not that sort of blonde, perfect Barbie image. So people were looking at it and going, well, Barbie doesn't really represent who we are, the breadth of who we are as women. And they also then subsequently had to reinvent that, because if nothing else, the toy industry is always responsive to the culture at large, reflecting trends there. And I also have a Barbie's, as you know, has been criticized. I was going to say castigated, but a little more important, a little more intense for her body shape. And I have this very waggish perspective about that. Now you're four, right? And your fingers aren't that developed yet. So Barbie's clothes are a tube. You can stick the doll's legs into the tube. You pull up the dress, and there's a nice little ledge you can rest it on while you snap the back. So it was really
designed. That's actually a good point. I didn't think about that.
right. Because everybody's looked at Barbie and said, oh, her proportions would never be realistic. Of course they wouldn't be realistic. It's a toy.
Right. I don't think I ever looked at Barbie when I was four and thought, I need to look like that.
Right.
Never crossed my mind.
Right. And it's true, because most girls at that age look at something like that, whether it's Barbie or later Bratz or any of that stuff. And because of their level of cognitive development, they only think pretty, you know, that's right. Pretty. So what's happened with Barbie has been in its evolution is the concept of what pretty is has expanded so much so that it is so much more diverse and inclusive that really, you know, there's a lot of pretty, you know, for everybody. And it's all about being accepting yourself, not trying to measure up to some ideal.
Right. Well, that's why I was it was kind of a shock that the Barbie movie, in my opinion, did so well. I mean, they really marketed it. I thought it came out 2 years ago because they've been spending that long in promoting it. But it's been 65 years since Barbie was created. And I would argue to say she's just as iconic as she was back then. So what do you think it is about 20 or I guess now it's 2024. So 2023, when that movie came out, why do you think her influence is still so strong today?
Barbie has always been a cultural icon, and like, unlike any other brand in the toy industry, she's been a lightning rod. When Teen Talk Barbie came out and said math is hard, oh my God, this was terrible. When Tokidoki Barbie, which was a collectible, came out with a tattooed sleeve, right? Oh my gosh, this is terrible. You know, and as I said at the time, nobody's going to dragoon your daughter down to the harbor and get them a tattoo. It's really about what's pretty. But Barbie, as I said before, has been this totemistic type of figure onto which people project all their other things. It's much easier to be mad at a piece of plastic than it is to sort of be vocal in the context of culture. That said, I think that the Barbie movie in 2023 could not have happened at any other time. And I think it's a really pivotal movie because it takes into account all of that controversy that's come behind Barbie, and it kind of puts it to rest, and it just says, yeah, this was what it was, but look at Barbie now, and that she's an empowered woman. She's the mayor. She's diverse. She's got diverse bodies. She's even got the Kate McKinnon, you know, weird Barbie, which kids have drawn on because kids did that for years, right? I almost ran over my niece's Barbie with the lawnmower one time when I was helping my brother, and I went, whoa, it's face down to the grass.
Watch out, Barbie.
right. But it's, you know, so it's really acknowledging all the history that's gone in the past and kind of in some ways putting it to rest, because if you look at Barbie really since 2016, Barbie's had different bodies, different hairstyles, different skin tones, all kinds of different ways of reflecting the diversity of our culture. So really now Barbie going ahead is for everybody, and perhaps it wasn't before.
Right. Do you, that's very well said and well put. It does describe the phenomenon that is Barbie, because she has had so many ups and downs,
right.
Just as times change, she had to change as well. Is there a Barbie in particular that you think of that maybe was the one to shift the perception of Barbie?
Wow, that is a great question. I don't think there was one. I think there was probably in the 80s when the We Girls Can Do Anything, Barbie came out. Barbie was an astronaut. Barbie suddenly had all these careers and these roles that perhaps previously had only been male related. And now she was opening up the possibility for that. So I think the movement that started to diversify what was possible in Barbie's world kind of reflected a growing sensibility in the real world of greater potential for women in the culture.
All right, we've got to step aside for a quick recess, but we'll be back right after this. And I think what's great too, I didn't know that a pregnant Barbie existed until I saw the movie. But I think that's amazing because you have this movement where it's like, okay, women can be anything, here are all the jobs, but then you kind of lost sight of the fact that Barbie can also be a mom. If you wanted to be a mom and you want to do that, then that's a beautiful thing. And I'm sad to hear that the pregnant Barbie was a little short-lived.
It was actually pregnant Midge. Don't mean to correct you, but it was actually pregnant Midge. And it's so funny because it's such a natural area of curiosity for children and young girls in Barbie age too. But like in many cases, it came out with this controversy that, oh, Barbie was promoting promiscuous sex by getting pregnant. And so, you know, the cultural noise that happened around the Barbie.
But it was Midge, so.
You know, just made them say, no, you know, we'll back off. And I think that's too bad because we're in a culture that makes kids ashamed of their bodies. But that's a whole other podcast.
Well, maybe Midge was married.
Yep, Midge was married.
Right. Midge was married, so it makes sense.
Right.
So that actually brings up another point. So Ken, he... and Alan, it's Alan, right?
Alan was his friend, yep.
Alan and Ken. So when did that happen? Why did they decide to introduce Ken and Alan as well?
Ken was introduced like in 1961, 63. I'm not sure off the top of my head. He followed up. So I have another theory about Ken, which is especially if you've seen the movie, Ken is also having his own existential crisis about who am I. But when Ken was first introduced, kids up to probably about 11 years old were playing with Barbie. And they were, at that age, they're starting to see their older siblings or cousins dating. So dating became a kind of a play pattern or fantasizing about dating. So you needed Ken to do that. Fast forward now, most core Barbie players are 4 to 6 years old and their brains have not developed to the point where they're even thinking about dating. Mm. And so Ken's original purpose is kind of irrelevant. So, right. Or not relevant to the development of the child who is playing with it. They're not fantasizing about
the
dating.
Target demo. Yeah.
Right. So who is Ken to them? I mean, if you're 4 or 6 years old, the male figure in your life is your dad or caregiver or uncles, or is an older adult in a kind of parental teacher role. It's not, or it's a peer, you know, the kid you play with in the sandbox, but it's not that kind of dating reflecting what you'd seen in like Gidget Goes Hawaiian or any of those dating teen movies that were popular in the early 60s when Ken came on the scene.
Huh. I didn't think about that fact because, yeah, it's true. When you're that age, you're not necessarily thinking of those. Also, I doubt any little boy was probably looking at Ken like, oh, I need to have washboard abs. If there was a little boy that played with Ken. My brothers, I think, liked to play with Barbie more than I did. But then as you get older, you start to appreciate just what Barbie does for a lot of people.
Right.
So she inspired Ken. She inspired Alan. Are there any other toys during that time that Barbie influenced in a way or the creation of?
Well, there were other fashion dolls, and fashion dolls came afterwards. Some of them, Hasbro had, oh God, I forget the name of the doll. Cindy, who was introduced in Europe, was kind of like a Barbie knockoff. But actually, Barbie influenced G.I. Joe. And people looked at Barbie and what was starting to happen with Barbie in the early years of the 60s and said, wait a minute, all these girls are playing with dolls. There's got to be something for a boy. And so that's when Hasbro came up with the idea of G.I. Joe, who the original G.I. Joe was Barbie size, right? So she's 12 inches, you know, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines. And they were the real American hero that actually came later. And God forbid you should call it a doll for boys. So that's where the term action figure came up. But it's actually, at the end of the day, it's the same play pattern. It's projecting onto a figure, a human-like figure, your aspirations for the future.
Ah, I was wondering about that, because if you look at the success of Barbie, it only makes sense that other people would start to think maybe there's a, not counterpart, but there is something for little boys and you're trying to create something for everyone.
Right.
With all of your knowledge and the research that you've done and your own background, what do you think is the best thing about Barbie? And what do you think is the most important note about her that people should know?
Well, I think the best thing about Barbie is no matter how many billions of dolls have been sold, no two are exactly alike, because every Barbie player brings that doll to life in their own way to reflect their own imagination. And I think that the point is that if you as an adult can give a child a Barbie, or give your child a Barbie free of your own issues about that and let the child freely explore that, I think it's pretty magical to watch a kid bring Barbie to life. I mean, we've seen kids work out challenges at school or conflicts by playing it out with Barbie. It's kind of classic therapy type of play, but it's play, and it's how children begin to define themselves and try on identities and explore what might work or doesn't work and what feels right to them. So it's really a wonderful play process. And, you know, playing with Barbie is not going to change a value structure that parents are introducing kids to. The kids get their values from the parents, not from a piece of plastic.
Very well put. And Chris, I appreciate, speaking of wonderful, this has been a wonderful conversation with you. Thank you for all of your insight, and we'll have to chat again. You were lovely, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. What fun. I really love talking about this.
All right, if you missed anything from class, these are my office hours, and here are my top takeaways about Barbie. Number one, in the decades before Barbie's creation, girls really only had dolls to play with that helped them practice being a mother. And if they wanted any sort of fashion doll, they were limited to paper dolls. After seeing a German doll named Bild Lilly, Ruth Handler, the inventor of Barbie, was inspired to create a more grown-up doll for girls with which they could mature and express themselves. Number two, critics of Barbie have pointed out her unrealistic body shape. However, Chris explains that Barbie's design wasn't necessarily to reinforce any specific body type, but instead to make it easier for children to play with. Over time, Barbie expanded to include different body shapes and sizes, allowing girls to better see themselves in the doll. And number three, if you want to know more about Barbie, check out my special, Who is Barbie, on Fox Nation. We had a ton of fun filming it, and I hope you like that as well. For more podcasts, you can go to foxnewspodcast.com, and don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave us a review. This has been Getting Schooled with Abby Hornacek on the Fox News Podcast Network. Class dismissed. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.